I have two topics. One is the supersoft X-ray sources in the strong wind phase, and the other is RSOFIC X-ray, supersoft X-ray light curves. About 10 years ago, we proposed a new mechanism in the evolution of binary, when the mass transfer rate from the companion exceeds some critical values, for example, 1 times 10 to the minus 6 solar masses, wide enough, blows a strong wind, then stabilize the binary evolution. This diagram so many times, I'm sorry, but I'd like to show you the this region. This is the wide arm mass and the mass accretion rate. This region is correspond to the steady hydrogen shell burning. But about this line, envelope of the wide arm expand to a resilient size and to form a common envelope. But in our new pictures, this region, wide enough doesn't expand so much. Instead, blows a strong wind. This completely changes the binary evolution. Because of, we can avoid formation of common envelope. This is a DD scenario by Event Cook and Webbing, and this second common envelope can be replaced with our new processes. So the in the strong wind phase, wide enough can accrete matter from the companion and grows in mass, and finally reaches the Chandrasekhar limit. This opens a new channel to type 1a. Then the question is, do really exist accretion wind? We call this kind of evolution accretion wind, or was accretion wind evolution, for simply. My answer is yes. At least we have two examples. One is the LMC supersoft source, and the other is the galactic supersoft source, SRG. This shows the optical light curves of LMC supersoft sources. We can see high and low state. High state is about 100 days, and the low state is 40 days. High state is 1 month brighter than the low state. And also, VSRG shows the same trend like that, but a little bit noisy. But we summarize observational characteristics of these two systems. The orbital period of these two systems between 0.5 and 1 day, suggesting a main sequence companion. And also optical high and low state, 100 to 20 days and 40 days. This case is 150 and 100 days, a little bit longer. In the LMC supersoft sources, the supersoft X-rays are detected only during the low state. This is a low sat result. This is a optical light curves correspond to high and low state. We can observe only this. This is the count rate of the supersoft X-ray. And we can observe only this low state. And also VSearch, radio is detected and suggested very high mass wind mass loss rate, about 5 times 10 to the minus 6 solar mass per year. These observational aspects suggest wind is intermittent. When the wind collide with the companion. Then the very surface layer of the companion is stripped off. Then the mass transfer is suppressed, mass accretion rate decreases. Then the wind stops. After some time, mass transfer is recovers, and the wind grows again. This cycle is repeated. Based on our wind model, we make sequences of this kind of high and low states. This is an observational result, and this is our model light curves. Intermittent mass transfer occurs like this. This is a mass transfer rate from the companion. And we have also a wind mass loss rate here, this slope. And this is a wide-off radius. Expand and shrink, expand and shrink. Also, this is a wide-off temperature. Only during the low state, temperature goes high and emit supersoft X-rays. During the wind phase, supersoft is absorbed by the wind. These can explain the characteristics or of the observations. Our model suggests wider mass, something like 1.2 to the 1.3 solar masses. And main sequence mass is 2.5 to 3 solar masses. And these are the mass losing rate from the secondary, and the wind mass loss rate, and the mass stripping rate. Mass stripping rate is very large compared to the wind mass loss rate. And also the wider growth rate is something like 1 times 10 to the minus 6 solar masses. So we expect the type 1A in about 1 times 10 to the 5 years. Also, we can produce galactic supersoft X-ray sources like this. This is observation, and also this is a light curve. Mass transfer rate is also intermittent, like this, and wind is also intermittent. This shows our model parameters. Wider mass is almost the same for the LMC supersoft sources, but the main sequence mass, companion mass, is a little bit massive. Wind mass loss rate is rather massive, and also stopping rate is rather massive. Growth rate of the fiber is almost the same, and we also expect type 1A in 10 to the 5 years. Okay, this in radio is detected in this system, suggesting this amount of wind mass loss rate. This is almost consistent with our models. We plot our two models in the initial period and the initial secondary mass diagram calculated by Han and Podzorowski. LMC supersoft X-ray source is a reasonable point, like here, but the V-surge is already out of range. But this is very important. Let me summarize our first point, first topics. Accretion wind is a key process to type Y supernovae. But the wind blows intermittently. We have found two supersoft sources in the intermittent wind phase, and the mass stripping rate is very important in these two systems. So we must include these processes in the evolution to type 1A. Further, I suggest a configuration of the circumbinary matter. We have two components. One is the high velocity wind forming like a bipolar flow. The other is the slowly expanding circumbinary disk or torus. This comes from mass stripping from the secondary. Probably we can observe this circumbinary disks in the type 1 explosion because these disks are very massive and dense compared to this high velocity wind. Further, we expect the no cavities around the binary when fireworks explode in a strong wind phase, because circumbinary disk exists just outside the binary orbit. If the stripping works more effectively, a more massive component is probably okay. For example, a 4 to 4.5 solar masses. This means much more younger age of the type 1, something like 0.2 giga years. In such a case, stripped masses reaches this amount of a very massive, 2 to 3 solar masses. Next topic is a recent outburst of Earth's field. Sokolsky explained Earth's field, then I skip that. We have six recorded outbursts of this system. Each outburst shows a similar light curve like this. The previous five outbursts are superimposed by Rossino, but this time we have organized the Y-band photometry. Y-band is a narrower band than the usual V-band and designed to avoid strong emission lines. So we can follow the continuum of the object. These are Japanese amateur astronomers. We obtain this kind of light curve. And we have found a plateau phase here in the Y magnitude. This is very important. This suggests this kind of accretion disk. But we need this kind of disk. In the very early phase, free emission from the optically thin ejector dominates the continuum. But in the later mid plateau phase, this irradiated disk dominates. Our model suggests this kind of light curve. This is a free component. This is days after the outburst, and in logarithmic scales is 10 days and 100 days, and this is the magnitude. And this is a black body component. In the later phase, irradiated disk dominates the continuum, and this is a total luminosity here. We have also reproduced both IC and Y magnitude by the same model. Problem is the super soft X-rays. We need this kind of a helium layer below the hydrogen burning zone. New helium layers build up under the hydrogen burning zone. In the later phase, heat from these layers becomes important to the luminosity. Super soft X-ray phase depends very on the hydrogen content, X. In the low hydrogen contents, for example, 8%, then the envelope quickly burned, and the wind stops here, and then super soft X-rays quickly increases like this. Also, in the low hydrogen content, much more helium layer build up under the hydrogen burning zone. So the much more heat comes from the helium layer. So the, we have longer duration of the super soft X-ray phase. We have a reasonable fit for the 20% hydrogen content here. And finally, we have a reasonable fit both for the optical and both for the super soft X-rays. This is a Swift observation, and also we have system parameters like these. White dwarf mass is 1.35 solar masses. How many? For the hydrogen content of 20%. At the maximum expansion of the envelope mass, reaches 4×10⁻⁶ solar masses. This means mass accretion rate about 2×10⁻⁶ solar mass per year before the ignition. So the about 70% of the envelope mass is blown in the wind. This is the ejecta mass. And this is almost consistent with the infrared observations. Infrared observations suggest 3×10⁻⁶ solar masses. But not consistent with the this morning Sokolovsky et al.'s results. But this is a very early phase. Probably very initial phase of the wind mass loss phase correspond to. About 30% of the envelope mass is left to add the white dwarfs. This corresponds to a helium mass accretion rate, something like 0.6×10⁻⁷ solar mass per year. This satisfying the carbon deflagration conditions given by Nomota and Kondo, 1999. So we expect type Y supernovae for these systems. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Is there any dependence on metallicity in your wind losses, and would the percentage change?
Basically, yes. If the metallicity is very low, then the wind is also very weak. Then the mass loss rate becomes, you know, the small. Much more mass is retained. I mean, much more mass is left in the final. But in this case, we assume solar abundance, but not try to another kind of metallicity. Only yours.
So for the two system, you consider as the progenitors for 1A, there were radio detections, but the radio observations for the action in super 1A, based on the observations by Lilo Pelagia and collaborators. Basically, there were low radio detections for about 2,000 type 1A supernova. So it's based on those observations, they ruled out perhaps, you know, the wind model from, for example, a symbiotic star. So I'm wondering whether the long detection in the radio for this 1A, whether that's in conflict with the mass loss rate, for example, you derived for the two systems.
But in this case, it's a very special case, I think. If the white dwarf explodes in the strong phase, this is okay. We can observe this kind of a very massive, you know, the circumbinary matters. But after the wind stops, if you observe this direction or the other direction, where the this is the fade out, something like, then we cannot observe circumbinary matters.
So basically, you're thinking the geometric
effect. Yeah. And the, you know, that depend on the time when the strong wind blows.
A couple of questions. One, can you remind us what criterion you use for stripping the secondary?
Oh, we use criterion of the energy. And that means, the kinetic energy collide with the surface. That is use the kinetic energy and equate the potential energy. Then I equate. That is determine the stripping rate.
And the other
that just on only the energy. Equation.
Okay. The other question is presumably, for high enough accretion rates, you can quench the wind.
Very difficult to answer.
The question is, do you have any sense of where that?
But the wind is very strong.
I'm sorry?
Wind is very strong. Then, the evacuate the large, the large amount of matters can evacuate.
But the larger the mass accretion rate, the larger the fraction of energy that you're using to drive the wind has to come from accretion itself rather than...
But depending on the mass transfer rate,
So at some point, presumably...
You are right, maybe right.
You don't have an idea of where that happens, though.
At the present time, we have no idea.
In the two examples you showed of the accretion wind, both those sources are have duty cycles of the order 100 days, right? And you said that the intermittent wind is caused by the fact that it strips the outer layers of the donor star and then shuts down the accretion and then it starts again. Do you expect that to happen in every accretion wind system? Or is it possible to have
depending on the mass transfer rate.
Uh-huh. So is it possible to have a more steady kind of accretion wind?
Okay.
I just had a question about the mass estimates for RJX0513 and for V Sagittae, and also for all three systems. How confident are you that these are carbon-oxygen white dwarfs?
I don't know, but I assume carbon-oxygen. But I think nobody knows.
This optically thick wind model is somehow based on a dynamical picture. It's not radiation driving any wind here. It's so much energy put into the surface layers of the star by nuclear burning that dynamically this stuff is moving out, right?
Yeah.
It's the inertia term in the stellar structure equations with the Rosalind mean opacity that is driving the wind out. There's no radiative pressure on lines or anything like that. Is that correct? Now, when I have a star that is accreting at such a high rate, don't you have to, in order for this high luminosity to appear, don't you have to assume that it is burning at a much higher rate than it would according to the Kormos luminosity relationship? I mean, my picture would be that there is a mass that this white dwarf has that sets, this is how much I can burn. If I accrete more, stellar evolution tells me that I'm accumulating envelope mass, and that leads me back to the AGB, at which point I will have radiation or even dust-driven heavy winds. So I don't really understand how I can be in this high luminosity regime, because I don't see how stars can burn so much more than what they're supposed to according to the Cormus luminosity relationship.
Luminosity itself is almost Eddington.
Sorry?
Luminosity itself is almost Eddington luminosity. Not so high, not so super Eddington, but almost Eddington.
But it is flashing, right?
You understand
flashing?
No flash. Yeah. That, I mean, we assume a steady.
I mean, you mean only just from the secretion picture, which I get in my thought. You need only one thirtieth of the Eddington luminosity to blow that matter away, because the nuclear burning produces much more than accretion would, and this is inverse of accretion. So you need not that much energy to blow the matter away.
But yeah, hydrogen burning rate is determined to this line, and above the this matter is coming from the the companions, and this matter is blowing by the wind, not burning. Hard to answer, but this is our, this configuration of the matter accretes from the equators and the wind goes from the poles. Basically, we assume this configuration.
Okay, now I get a few. first is your estimate for the accretion rate for R soap and quiescence. That's about an order of magnitude larger than typically estimated from observations. Do you have any comment about the comparison to observational estimates?
I don't know exact values of the. Do you know?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but maybe Marina, do you know?
But it is very difficult to estimate because of the cool wind.
The only observational fact that I remember is that in X-rays, the luminosity at quiescence it varies, but it's quite low, so like 10^-9, so mass is pretty, so it's really much much lower.
But obscured by the wind.
I just wanted to make one comment about the winds, because we've been talking about how winds are needed for the binary evolution. From the perspective of just the question of whether the binary can survive, whether that wind is generated because of radiation onto the donor, a la Van Tiesling and King, or onto the disk, or whether it comes from the white dwarf, all of these mechanisms are... As far as I know, they're still possible. So I just wanted to mention that this particular mechanism, we seem to have some evidence for it in the form of winds that are ejected by the systems, that we see the winds, but that in order to save the binaries, and in fact physically one expects that some of these other mechanisms drive winds as well. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Yeah, thank you.
I have another one as well, which is when you're talking about the mast estimates for the ejecta from RSOF. Of course, our stuff was for the initial material ejected early on, but you also mentioned some of the interferometry results, and for example, the Lane et al. Paper, and that is an upper limit in the Lane paper based on a very simplified distribution, a density distribution that's like a constant distribution producing the infrared. So that's an upper limit. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, it's not a measurement mm-hmm. of mass lost from the Lane interferometry paper. I don't know the DAS paper.
The predictions you make of the wind is both a very dense wind as well as blowing off parts of the secondary. Are there any observational evidence? I mean, presumably he's been doing this for a long time. Is there evidence of shells around these or circumbinary disks or things like Spitzer images that show infrared excesses or anything like that?
I hope someone observes such a circumbinary matters. You observe? You, no? But
anymore?
I very much hope.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much for your stimulating talk.